Joe Courtney, tell me about this. The national polls are showing that Hillary Clinton, who I know you are for,
yep,
and various numbers of Republicans are very close in the polls. So we have this show in which people who went to college, people who didn't go to college, all know that some of the things that have come out of the mouths of these candidates who want to satisfy a right-wing constituency, small right-wing constituency that shows up for, you know, primary elections. Some of the things that have come out of their mouths are, well, are nutty.
Yep.
So my question to you is, how come it's, you know, some people are actually beating Hillary? How come Hillary's, you know, very close to guys like Trump and Cruz and all the rest? How come?
I think Bill Clinton months ago, you know, I forget whether he was down here in D.C. or, you know, speaking somewhere else in the country, though. But he, you know, made what I thought was a really powerful point, which is that, you know, the natural sort of rhythm of American politics is going to be at work here this year, where there's a fatigue factor for any party that's been in possession of the White House for two consecutive terms. And the and so for Democrats who think, you know, Hillary's a slam dunk and that the Republicans are not fielding a real serious candidate, in my opinion, are being very complacent and really missing that rhythm that that President Clinton talked about. And so so I think people really need to recognize this is going to be a very contested year. There are so many forces that, you know, care about who's picking the next Supreme Court justice, you know, who's going to be, you know, enforcing, you know, these clean air rules that President Obama is trying to put into place, Affordable Care Act, that it really could almost be anybody on the Republican side, and they are still going to get a massive amount of resources, you know, pushing their candidacy. Again, having said all that, the comments that Donald Trump has been making, which, you know, are as vicious and un-American as anything I've ever heard in my life, you know, I do think is a real threat to the Republican Party. And if he runs as a third party candidate, you know, sort of like a George Wallace, then you know, I think, you know, that's another really huge factor that I think could you know, overcome that natural rhythm that President Clinton, you know, former President Clinton talked about. And you know, I've been waiting for the laws of gravity to take effect on Donald Trump, and it's just amazing to me that he just keeps going up in the polls for Republican voters. And that party is obviously not my father's Republican Party, you know, back in, you know, when Eisenhower was president. And you know, I think for guys who were, you know, the Northeast moderate Republicans, and I talked to Lowell Weicker, actually, still now and again, I mean, he's horrified what's happened to that party.
Do you think Donald Trump could be president of the United States, actually has a chance of getting elected?
I really don't. Again, I think I just think that the Republican, you know, establishment, such as it is, you know, what's left of it, you know, it would defect from him. I had dinner last week with four House Republicans and a couple other Democrats. We were at the table. There were seven of us, and we went around the table with these guys to just ask them, you know, who they're supporting. And it was 3-1 Rubio and one for Rand Paul. And they were unanimous in viewing Trump as just totally toxic. And these were, you know, it was a pretty wide range of Republicans at the table. There were Tea Party and there were moderates. And, you know, he's beyond the pale for even some of the most really, you know, strong, vociferous Republicans in the House Republican caucus. So that really says something about, you know, how far out of the mainstream he is, the Republican Party.
And yet, we see the polls.
Yep.
Ever since he made his Muslim, anti-Muslim, they should stay out announcement, he's up 9 points. He's got over 40 points now.
Well, like I said, it's like the laws of gravity are not in effect here. And, I still think at some point, you know, they're going to kick in. And you know, some polls in Iowa show him now dropping behind Cruz. So, you know, sometimes maybe the national polls are a little bit, you know, less granular in terms of just the way the process really kind of unfolds. So, you know, that's another thing that I think, you know, is maybe somewhat of a countervailing trend.
You represent a district where submarines are made, right?
Yep, I do.
And I know you fought very hard for these allocations. When the great deal was made between Democrats and Republicans, and it was an agreement to hold back money on both sides, obviously, while you're a Democrat, that submarine question was on the other side of the ledger. Did that put you in an awkward position?
So this is back when we did the Budget Control Act?
Yes.
So actually, it was interesting you should say that, because before the vote, I actually put a call in to the then Deputy Secretary for Acquisition at the Pentagon and really kind of spent a lot of time on the phone sort of walking through the way they were looking at it over there. Again, remember, sequestration was never intended to actually be a policy that would go into effect.
Right.
It was just supposed to be an incentive, but... you know, so, you know, back then we were naive in terms of thinking that Republicans would actually negotiate different ways to reduce the deficit. But even with that, and I know this may sound, you know, parochial on my part, but the fact is, in terms of where the Navy is prioritizing, you know, their shipbuilding right now, the undersea fleet is really at the top of the list. And there's a lot of reasons for that in terms of, you know, what's going on in Asia Pacific, and now even, you know, with Putin. I mean, they just deployed some absolutely brand spanking new attack subs out of, you know, the Russian Navy bases on their East Coast. And again, it's not an arms race. This is not the Cold War all over again. But the undersea fleet had fallen so dramatically in the wake of the Cold War that I think, you know, they realized they've really got to stop the decline and at least, you know, mitigate the retirement of the sort of Cold War era fleet, which is happening, you know, three or four a year now, because it was, you know, 30 plus years ago that those were built. So in terms of where we are as far as shipbuilding, just to give you a quick, you know, example, back in the day in the 80s when, you know, it was the full, you know, hunt for Red October and everything going on back then, they were spitting out about five subs a year down in Groton. We're now at a 2 a year build rate, and we actually divide some of that work with Virginia. So the workforce today is roughly about 9,000 or 10,000. It's supposed to go up to about 12,000 over the next few years or so. But in the '80s, it was closer to 28,000.
Yeah.
So we're, again, I want to underscore that for your listeners. We're not talking about the Reagan buildup here, but you know, at some point, I believe we need a Navy, and certainly as far as the mix of ships and the fleet, submarines are in a very strong place.
We thank you so much, Joe Courtney. You're a wonderful guy, and you come by and you talk to us, and you don't have to, but you do it anyway, and that's, to me, what makes a real human being, and we thank you so much for doing it.
The Courtney household, WAMC, is what we have attuned to that 90.3 very frequently, so it's a pleasure. Yeah.